Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
This week, an announcement from the BLM in Montana that they are suspending indefinitely the environmental review on drilling for natural gas along Montana's Rocky Mountain Front has left the advocates of public lands happy, hopeful, and amazed. How this came about is a story worth hearing. When we return, we talk with Gloria Flora, whose life is rooted in this momentous change here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
This week, the BLM reversed its effort to advance drilling permits in the vast open splendors of Montana's Rocky Mountain Front. It is not an understatement that those who have worked hard to protect their communities from the radical transformation of their natural space that gas exploration requires are stunned, hope-filled, and suddenly confronting a sustainable future that seemed only days ago unlikely. Gloria Flora's life has been shaped by the place, the space, and the struggle. I'm pleased to be able to have Gloria Flora here to tell her story. Welcome.
Hi, Sydney. Thank you for the invitation to join you today.
Why don't you start out by giving people a short summary of what this announcement actually is?
Well, this is a surprise coming from the Department of Interior. That is the Bureau of Land Management is the agency that was promoting this environmental impact statement to evaluate the effects of drilling three wells with a potential to drill an additional eight more in an area known as the Rocky Mountain Front here in north central Montana.
And why don't you describe that front so that our listeners get a sense of what we're talking about?
Now, the Rocky Mountain Front is an absolutely splendid piece of landscape. It extends from south of Glacier National Park for 100 miles along the eastern edge of the Rocky Mountains, where literally they crash into the Great Plains. You have a very abrupt transformation of landscapes with towering limestone cliffs thousands of feet high meeting literally in a very short zone the broad expanses of the Great Plains. It's an abundantly rich wildlife area and has been very, very lightly developed, characterized mostly by large ranches.
It is a spectacular place. If people haven't been there, it's one of the grandest open spaces you'll ever experience in America, quite honestly. Well, your history is very much wrapped up in this particular piece of land. And let's try to talk a little bit about how it is that you came to this moment, particularly starting out with your work with the Forest Service years ago.
Yes, I have worked for the Forest Service in the past for about 22 years. One of my jobs, more recently in the mid-90s, was as forest supervisor of the Lewis and Clark National Forest. The Rocky Mountain Front lies largely within the Lewis and Clark National Forest. Our forest was involved in an analysis to determine which, if any, lands on the forest should be leased. After spending literally years talking with thousands of citizens, organizations, government officials, members of industry, etc., I came to the conclusion that leasing of the lands of the Rocky Mountain Front would be not in the best interest of the American public. And so I made that decision that for a planning period, that is from 10 to 15 years, that there would be a moratorium on all oil and gas leasing on the Rocky Mountain Front. But I did not have the authority to alter the situation with the existing leases that had already been identified on the front.
Well, things began to heat up because some people weren't happy with your decision.
Well, actually, very few people were unhappy with the decision. That was primarily some industry groups that appealed, and they were my decision was upheld through appeal. They also then took the issue to court, and they tried to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court refused to hear it, but in the lower court and in the appeals court, they lost on all counts.
One of the things that I'm sure influenced this was the fact that there were, I believe it was 40,000 responses concerning this issue, and talk about that, because it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, with the after I left the Forest Service in 99, I moved back to Montana and once again became involved in the issues regarding the Rocky Mountain Front. And this environmental impact statement was started about a year ago, and in the scoping comment period, which is the initial comment period where an agency kind of gets the pulse of what citizens may be concerned about. And in this scoping period, the BLM received 49,000 responses, and 99% of them were opposed to any development of the front.
Right. Now, also, towards the end of your working with the Forest Service, there were actually bomb threats and other things, which is a very unfortunate thing, but that actually helped you to make a decision that you could no longer continue.
Yes, that was in a different state and had nothing to do with the Rocky Mountain Front at the time. And, yeah, essentially, I was confronted, as the supervisor of the largest national forest in the lower 48 states, I was confronted with a small group of people who were very much opposed to any federal authority. They believed that the U.S. Constitution was their only guide, and actually the U.S. court system did not have any jurisdiction over them. Therefore, they believed that I, as a federal employee and working for the Forest Service, had no authority or jurisdiction. And as such, they basically had their way with the land and harassed and intimidated my employees to the point where I truly believed someone was going to be seriously injured or killed. So I resigned to call attention to that fact, and returned to my beloved Montana.
And there you decided you would really dedicate yourself to continuing this battle for the Rocky Mountain Front. Let's talk about what happened then.
Well, when I returned, I started an organization, a nonprofit organization that I'm continuing to run today called Sustainable Obtainable Solutions, because at the bottom of this discussion, really, we're talking about the sustainability of public lands. And oil and gas development is an extractive activity that focuses on non-renewable resources. So once you extract the energy, it's gone. And so in looking at how to live more sustainably and treat our public lands more sustainably, it becomes abundantly obvious that this current push, this headlong rush, if you will, towards developing every conceivable fossil fuel that that this country can lay its hands on is really a very short-sighted attempt to quick fix what is long-term not a sustainable way to continue living, and that is our reliance on fossil fuels. So with my organization's focus on ensuring the sustainability of public lands and of the plant, animal, and human communities that depend on them, the Rocky Mountain Front was a natural issue for me to get re-involved in.
You know, it's amazing. As of a few days ago, a week ago, it almost seemed as if the struggle was still, it was at that point, actually still on the front burner. And then suddenly, this week, something happened. What do you think brought that about? This sudden change?
Well, I believe that the Department of Interior, on receiving continual feedback from their people here in the field, recognized that, one, there was overwhelming public opposition to any form of energy development on the Rocky Mountain Front. Secondly, it was an extremely costly environmental impact statement. The taxpayers had already funneled about $1 million into the first year of this study, and it was estimated that the study would cost at least another $1 million. So on top of that, there would be lengthy appeals and litigation. The Bureau of Land Management truly expected that it could be 10 years after a decision was made before any activity would actually occur on the ground, or that that activity would be legally forbidden in the courts. So with that level of complexity, with that level of public dissatisfaction with the idea, I think the department made a very common sense decision. And it's a shame that we find common sense decisions so scarce and unusual, but unfortunately that is the way it seems to go. So they made this common sense decision to cut their losses, essentially, and to redirect that money towards a more meaningful evaluation of whether or not oil and gas leasing is an appropriate activity along on the whole Rocky Mountain front. And I'm sure the Forest Service will join them in that analysis. And I think the only logical conclusion is that the Rocky Mountain front has a much higher and better use, and that is remaining undeveloped.
I know there's a lot of us who are thrilled at this decision, obviously, and we can actually have hope that perhaps there is a change taking place in regards to the way in which our public lands are viewed, administered, and preserved, particularly by our public land agencies. I'm just curious, what are you hearing from your community about this sudden opening of and security of your future?
Well, we are cautiously optimistic, and I say cautiously because maintaining our goal to find ways to permanently protect the Rocky Mountain front from development and excessive motorized use, this is just one step in the overall war, if you will. You know, this is a battle won and a hard-fought battle, and we're very pleased about this. But there's still a ways to go before we can relax. Now, what this might portend for other lands in the West, we're very optimistic that this could be an opening of the hearts and minds of the people in this administration and hopefully in the next administration, that we truly need to recognize there are some lands that are much more valuable to the American public and future generations left undeveloped.
Gloria, thanks so much for being here on the Wild Side News. It's Sydney Wild just saying adios until we meet again.
Thank you, Sydney.